colleagues, distinguished delegates, representatives from countries, Director General, let me again thank the Director General for this call to action, for bringing us all here today to make this meeting, this conversation, hopefully a new start, a new chapter, ensuring that we are collectively responding, not only to meet needs, because it is not just about meeting today's needs. It's also about building the longer-term resilience and giving people, those who are affected in this conversation by the effects of El Nino, giving them the capacity to feed themselves over the longer term. Whether we are in Africa, Asia, or as well as in highly impacted areas in Haiti, or the dry corridors we discussed last week, which the DG noted. Excellencies, the truth is, the unprecedented impact of this El Nino, coupled with, in many cases in these countries, up to 4 years of drought, devastates people's food and nutrition security. As farms fail, work opportunities dry up, and access to any available nutritious food becomes increasingly out of reach, particularly for poor and marginalized people. Today, 80% of the population that WFP supports live in climate marginal areas. So building durable and sustainable resilience for communities confronting the combined effects of climate change, persistent poverty, and chronic hunger requires, yes, first, addressing immediate humanitarian needs, ensuring that people have the access to the nutritious food that is required so that they can continue to move forward. But we can't stop there. We must agilely provide the requisite tools which will ensure that farmers and communities and their governments adapt to the changing and ever more detrimental weather patterns. And I'm sure my colleague from WMO will talk more about these weather patterns, because every characteristic of the challenges represent climate injustice. It's the environmental challenges created in one part of the globe affecting poor and marginal people in another part of the globe. And I know the experts tell us that El Nino is not a climate effect. It is a regular weather pattern. But the reality is, think about this. This is what many of the scientists say, and I'm hoping that my colleague from WMO will support when he speaks today. Mary Robinson and I talked about this when she accepted the role of special envoy. Is because warming waters will affect regular weather patterns, creating greater intensity in what have been traditional and regular weather patterns. So we are now dealing with a situation where people living in marginal places are being affected by the most severe El Nino and La Nina now, as the pattern changes, in recorded history. And it's wreaking havoc on vulnerable people. In the Southern African region, the WFP recently declared what we call a corporate L3 within the UN system, giving us the capacity to use all of the tools across the entire organization to surge the resources that are required for the WFP team working with the FAO team and OCHA and UNICEF in Southern Africa to address the immediate needs, but as you heard from the Director General, having the agility to work expeditiously to meet the additional needs that are required to support providing the tools that are necessary for people to move on. The SADC region faces a 30% staple cereal deficit today. Across what is traditionally part of the breadbasket, we purchase food regularly from the Southern African region for support to meet humanitarian needs on other parts of the continent. And now, for the first time, donors who have been telling us that they want us to go to cash have acknowledged this is a food availability challenge in Southern Africa, and that cash won't do, that we're going to need to bring in food to parts of the breadbasket of the continent to meet the food assistance needs of the population now affected by El Nino. Such a significant shortfall that we are talking about here today requires urgent and large-scale action to prevent the acute food insecurity and malnutrition that and to ensure that populations don't face negative coping strategies, setting them back on any development gains that this vulnerable population has made to date. And we know that negative coping strategies will occur because prices of food have risen so exponentially. And those who have access to food will attempt to purchase food at these increased rates. For example, in Mozambique, maize prices have doubled since the last season. And throughout the region, high levels of food and nutrition insecurity, as well as increasing economic shocks in places like South Africa itself, have exacerbated the vulnerabilities of the affected population. And one area we don't often talk about here in Rome, but both FAO and WFP are co-sponsors for the UNAIDS work. And Southern Africa, as you know, is one of the highest prevalence areas of people who are AIDS affected living, HIV and AIDS affected living in those communities. And we also know that the effectiveness of antiretroviral treatment requires access to nutritious food. And back in Malawi again, unfortunately, what the data is telling us is that there is a fourfold increase in malnutrition in the population of HIV and AIDS, the HIV and AIDS affected population, which could again increase the numbers of HIV and AIDS cases in Southern Africa, further complicating, further exacerbating the situation in Southern Africa. So in Southern Africa, the seven of the most highly impacted El Nino countries, and you heard the numbers from the Director General of the population that require immediate food assistance. And you'll hear us talking about these numbers, and why are we talking about them today? Because this has been going on for several months, is because the world is not paying attention. We have not received the support that is necessary, or the attention that is necessary to ensure the investments that are required to meet the needs of this population. In East Africa, where in Ethiopia there actually has been more media attention around this issue than there's been in Southern Africa, the situation still remains grave because we are now beginning to see the first effects of La Nina in Ethiopia and the Horn, where we're now, following the droughts, we're beginning to see floods. And what the large number of people in Ethiopia that were affected, the early national response proved to be life-saving in that country. And what was exciting for us as we talked this over the past several months in Ethiopia was that what was a record-setting drought in Ethiopia did not result in the 1980s type of food crisis that brought the global attention to that part of the world when we saw babies with bloated bellies and stomachs because of droughts in Ethiopia. And the Ethiopian government deserves all the credit for the fact that babies did not die, that people did not go hungry, that the nutrition situation was not worse, because the global community was late to the party. And much of the global community still has not come to the response to date. The largest contributor to the Ethiopia response has been and remains the government and the people of Ethiopia. That deserves applause, ladies and gentlemen, because the reality is the government of Ethiopia did not wait and wring their hands when the world did not come. And they continue to lead today in the response. So Ethiopia's concerted action foiled a severe humanitarian crisis. But the reality is, the battle is not yet won in Ethiopia. And the needs remain high. And there are a number of donor governments that have begun to invest, but we need everyone. These challenges do not belong to any one donor, one set of donors. And when the countries are doing exactly what we tell them to do, and that is lead, and FAO, WFP, EFAT are there working with them, we need the remainder of the global community to invest. And we're also seeing the effects in conflict areas that are net importing countries that are facing food insecurity challenges like South Sudan, Somalia, and Burundi. And so ensuring that we don't forget those countries as well. The DG spoke about South Asia and the impacts there. In Indonesia, El Nino has seen about 3 out of 5 households in the worst affected districts, those with the lowest income, with 1 in 4 family members reducing the number of meals that they eat today. For their children, reducing the number of meals, resulting in, again, rising malnutrition rates. And to manage the crisis in Papua New Guinea, the humanitarian appeal was recently launched to ramp up both the emergency assistance as well as the operational capacity of a country that is facing the challenge without the necessary resources. Excellencies, it's clear. Whether we speak of Africa, Asia, or indeed anywhere impacted by El Nino, the looming La Nina, or other climate-related crisis-causing phenomena, poor and marginalized people are disproportionately impacted. In our discussions this morning, agreement on the collective requirements to go forward is vital. As we listen closely to the people and communities we serve and the governments who lead. Because enabling poor people to get ahead of these punitive droughts and poverty cycles requires a new way of supporting individuals, communities, as well as government, not only to respond, but also to agilely build the support that is required to manage the unprecedented but predictable risk. We cannot keep saving the same lives every year. We need not continue to save the same lives every year. We know what is required to address the persistent blind spots, including gender inequality, access to land, access to the appropriate seeds and tools, access to the low-tech irrigation system, storage facilities, the kinds of things that FAO talks about every single day that is required to change the lives of smallholder farmers while simultaneously mitigating new climate-related challenges. Climate change adaptation requires providing climate justice. for the tough people living in marginal places. It requires us to fundamentally overcome underlying inequalities that support the structural poverty that too many of those affected live through every day. Achieving Agenda 2030 requires us to do nothing less. First, as the Director General highlighted, given both the scale and nature of today's challenges, significant and immediate emergency assistance is necessary. There's no time to lose. Whenever possible, actions must be taken in an integrated manner, harnessing the power of all the food systems, ensuring the next time the rains don't come that we have the right seeds and tools. The smart agricultural adaptation systems that the DG described to you in place. FAO, EFED, and WFP are committed to working together. But we're committed to working with the governments, with local community actors, and with the affected people. Committed to further strengthening and expanding programs, such as homegrown school feeding, cash-based interventions, and safety net programs. We must also look towards longer-term activities like modern financing and insurance approaches, such as demonstrated by the African Risk Capacity, now an agency of the AU, where affected countries are investing in the policies that are necessary to give them the payouts that are required for early action. And the R4 Rural Resilience Initiative, which provides microinsurance to smallholder farmers, giving them the financial tools to address their own challenges and to measure and balance their own risk and how they respond to that risk. And we must take concrete steps to ensure that women, the world's food nutrition first responders, possess equitable access to the social, educational, and economic opportunities necessary for supporting their own lives, the progress of their families, as well as their community. Removing barriers currently standing in the way of women's full empowerment, such as blocking land ownership, access to basic financial services, will require, in many cases across these affected countries, specific legal and policy reform, as well as the work that we have been describing. And fourth, we must encourage and engage private sector. Private sector engagement is necessary to generate and sustain broad growth, not only in the agri-food value chain, but also in wider food systems. And acknowledging that, as EFED reminds us often, that smallholders are the principal business people, the principal private investors in food systems, which means we must prioritize meeting smallholder improvement needs, giving farmers the access to financing, extension, innovation, which makes them commercially viable actors in the food system. As I close, ladies and gentlemen, this crisis is real. And whether the newspapers are writing about it or it appears on CNN or BBC, it is real and it is deepening, it is becoming more complicated, it is expanding. Our objective, even as we build the increasingly necessary emergency response, must now be for systematic solutions to the deeply rooted, systematic and structural problems preventing food systems from delivering nutritious food to hungry people when they need it at prices that they can afford. Living up to the Global Agenda 2030 commitments, moving from responding, moving to managing today's unprecedented but predicted risk, requires financial investment, not just in an emergency response, but financial investment in the agricultural climate adaptation work. Not just talking about it, investing in the multi-year work that is required to provide climate justice to tough people now living in climate-affected marginal places. People depending on our collective capacity to apply tools, to work together, as well as our willingness to deliver the change particularly for women. This is the only way that we can and will address the challenges today and achieve different outcomes tomorrow. Those people farthest behind, those people who will never make the headlines, those people who had no hand in nature's destruction, the tomorrow of peace and prosperity, those people, like each and every one of us, deserve nothing less. Thank you all.
Excellencies, chairs, colleagues, and friends, I'm very happy to be here on behalf of EFED for the second event on the El Niño. I was here about 3 months ago for the first event where we joined hands with the RBA's OCHA and WMO. We've all heard about the unpredictability of the El Niño and the La Niña, the fact that more is yet to come, and that the farmers are looking forward to barren fields, meager harvests, hunger, and poverty. We also hear that it's difficult to predict the specific impact of La Niña, but it typically brings extreme weather to the same regions which have been affected by the El Niño. And these are the same areas where the capacity of the people to cope has already been eroded by the adverse weather conditions. Areas that experience high rainfall could suffer drought, and areas that are impacted by drought could be facing heavy rainfall and flooding during the forecasted La Niña. When we talk about priorities for action, the immediate priority is clear. With about 26.5 million children at risk of malnutrition in just East and Southern Africa alone, food aid is the priority. But with the likelihood of more frequent and more extreme weather events in the years ahead, we must also make it a priority to invest in the resilience of those who are most affected and who are most vulnerable. And in the areas that EFAD works, drought and intense rainfall cycles have increased, particularly during the El Niño La Niña cycles. And the poor men and women that we work with are more vulnerable to poverty and hunger, as I said before. Now, when disaster strikes, farmers in developing countries have safeguards. They have crop insurance, access to financial services, assets, and social safety nets. But smallholder farmers in developing countries do not have these safeguards. Even in the best of times, they find it too risky to even invest in their farms, to experiment with new crop varieties, to diversify into new crops or livestock. And when disaster does strike, these farmers are forced to take drastic action. Take their children out of school, sell their assets, abandon their farms, migrate to the cities and beyond. At the family level, when farmers give up land or abandon land that they have farmed for generations, it is sad. But on a national level, it is catastrophic because this exacerbates food insecurity and malnutrition. Now, as we all know, small family farmers are responsible for producing 80% of the food in developing countries. But it's these same farmers that go hungry when disaster strikes. 70% of the world's poor are in the developing countries' rural areas. And most depend on small-scale agriculture for their livelihoods. So investing in the resilience of these smallholder farmers means investing in the resilience of food systems, in the resilience of communities, and the strength of nations. At EFAD, we work to improve the ability of rural people to manage a growing set of risks in a rapidly changing world. In 2010, EFAD introduced a climate change strategy because we were already seeing that climate change was leading to more volatility and risk in the agricultural sector. In 2012, EFAD created the Adaptation for Smallholder Agricultural Program, or ASAP as we call it, It's an innovative financing mechanism that delivers climate financing directly to the smallholder farmers. And today, ASAP is the largest global financing source dedicated to supporting the adaptation of smallholder farmers to build resilience to climate change. I'm happy to note that we have our Director of Environment and Climate Division, Ms. Estralaga, who's here, who manages this program, and I'm sure she will have more inputs into the ensuing discussions. At EFAD, we have seen that investing the resilience does pay off. Let me give you a few examples from the countries that have already been mentioned, some examples what EFAD has done and the impact that we have seen. In Ethiopia, which has been mentioned many times, we worked with small-scale farmers to build small-scale irrigation schemes that they manage and they own. They have been trained in more sustainable water usage, rainwater harvesting, and reclamation of degraded soils. And as a result, these communities have not been affected by this most severe drought. In Ethiopia, EFAD, hand in hand with the government, has been able to provide direct access to more than 150 communities, 320,000 people, and these communities have coped. Across the globe, in Vietnam, which is facing the biggest drought in some say 60 years, some say 90 years, with a lot of rainwater incursion into the Mekong Delta, EFAD programs in the Mekong Delta have developed saline-resistant fish varieties. And we have encouraged communities to move away from just dependence on rice. Because as you know, during this current drought, almost 500,000 hectares of rice paddy is under threat. In El Salvador, an EFAD-supported program has worked with farmers to improve soil and water conservation. And as a result, farming communities are not going hungry during this current drought. The benefits of this investment in resilience are not just over 1 year. It's over a longer period. For instance, EFAD investments in Niger in 1980s helped improve traditional water harvesting techniques. And after the project ended in 1996, the communities continued to adopt these techniques. And between 1994 and 2004, the water level in their wells increased by almost 14 meters. And the villagers developed vegetable gardens around these wells. As a result, during the worst drought of 2011, villagers reported that no children had died. These are powerful examples. So, ladies and gentlemen, EFAD is pleased to join our RBA partners and WMO today in taking stock of El Nino impacts on agriculture, food security, and nutrition. By working together, we can ensure that our response addresses the full range from the immediate humanitarian needs to the longer-term development needs of affected communities. But when we consider early action, let's be careful not to overlook the importance of also taking action now to build the resilience so that when the next El Niño or the La Niña strikes, as it definitely will, those that who are the most vulnerable will be able to cope. Thank you.